Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday. Is it Wednesday? Is it really Wednesday? God. It's Wednesday. I don't know what day it is. It's Wednesday, the 28th of February. It's very nice to have you with us, and we thank you very much for joining us as always. You can be a part of our program by simply writing to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. In our pre-show meeting with the panel, we came to this conclusion: there's too much news. So
way too much news.
But we have 90 minutes to try to slice and dice as much as we possibly can and figure out what's going on in this world of ours. So let me introduce our panelists to you. We have two communications experts with us. One is Teresa Bourgeois. She is a regular on this program. We're thrilled to have her, and we thank you very much for being here.
And so delighted to be on this beautiful, beautiful pre-nor'easter snow
day. Yeah, the
day.
Last 2 days have been pretty nice. Very nice. We'll take it. The other communications consultant is one of the best in the business, and he is with us this morning, Joe Bonilla. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you. It is a wonderful day out, and we've been lucky and fortunate to have this weather right now, but snow is a reality of the Northeast.
That's right. Yeah. Well, you know, we're used to it. And yeah. And the good news is, unlike most other days, today Jen doesn't have to drive in it.
So look at that, eh?
So that's good. Jen Smith is a reporter for the Berkshire Eagle and made her way over the mountain and is here. And it was smooth sailing for once over the last month, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Except for, you know, actually when it's snowy out, it's better for me because no one else is on the road. But this morning, traffic was just
crazy.
Yeah, because
everybody's cluster
going somewhere. That's right. Well, good morning. Very nice to have you with us.
It's great to be back.
We should note that Alan is away and will be away for a couple of days. So we wish him well, but we are here and he will be back with us, I believe, on Monday. So there you go.
Terrific.
But as I mentioned, we have a lot to talk about and we will get right to that now. So let's talk about security clearances and our...
And those who don't have them.
And those who don't have them, those have been downgraded.
Right.
So Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law and senior advisor, has been stripped of his top secret security clearance after months of delays in completing his background check and will now be limited in his ability to view highly classified information, according to a White House official and another person familiar with Mr. Kushner's, quote, situation. Mr. Kushner's clearance was reduced to the level of secret. You go from top secret to secret. Stephen Colbert last night during his monologue made the joke that means that you only are allowed to know 9 of the 11 herbs and spices in the
country. That's right. That's right. Those two are the top.
Yeah. So this is in regard to the foreign affairs work of Mr. Kushner on behalf of President Trump. And, well, that, we assume, will be reduced as a result of this. Since the beginning of the Trump administration, Mr. Kushner and his wife Ivanka, the president's eldest daughter, have enjoyed a special status within the White House as both family members and assistants to the president. Well, let me ask, I'll begin with you, Teresa, but let me ask a question that maybe is just me being dumb, but I didn't we know this was a problem? Like, what? Why is this? It seems like the entire world knew this and is just letting the White House know.
How did they get clearance in the first place?
Well, even or have the clearance or allowed to do, and then they said, is now suddenly an issue because, of course, of what happened with General Kelly's
Porter.
Assistant, yes.
Right. So I've not understood for a long time about how this could go on because clearance is such a critical thing. So every White House in the beginning, the new people, because there's so many people who have get cleared right away, there is this lag, you know, where you get temporary clearance. But usually it's at the most 6 months. And anyone who might have a problem, they, you know, they're not in the White House and certainly not as in close proximity to the president. Mm-hmm. Like, in fact, Porter, it just stuns me that Rob Porter, who is the closest to the president in terms of the information that somebody in that job, he or she sees, was in his job without full clearance. But now we're, what, a year and 2 months? Well past the time. So I don't know how this was allowed to go on as long as it was. And you think back about the Trump the Trump campaign, you know, lock her up, and what was that over? Handling of national security information, you know, primarily mm-hmm. about what was in the emails. Was there, you know, classified information in the emails? So here you have Jared Kushner and reportedly about 30 other people. You had yesterday, not only this, you had four people leave the Commerce Department over the security because they couldn't get security clearance. One of the things that I wonder is if Jared Kushner cannot get security proper security clearance because of his financial dealings, presumably, and, you know, let's talk about 666 Fifth Avenue, right?
One of the worst deals ever.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. And the need for right now negotiating refinancing of that deal.
Very soon.
Yeah.
How is it then that Ivanka Trump has clearance?
I mean, in the news business, we just generally call this a conflict of interest, where if you have a conflict of interest, you shouldn't be involved in an issue. But, you know, this is something that the administration was called out from the get-go, but yet it. No one stepped up internally to say, you know, this isn't a good idea. Let's not allow it. Let's just nip it in the bud. And now it's brewed for a year, you know, as has the, you know, Kushner's family debt and the ties to that. None of that has really changed. And again, you know, there's still plenty of questions to ask in terms of, well, what does secret clearance mean? I have yet to see that really clearly explained in some of the reports that I've read. And, you know, let's just be honest, who's to generally say that if Ivanka still has the same sort of clearance, they don't have kitchen table talk.
Well, and this whole, there's several aspects of this that I find greatly disturbing, much I think many of us do. One is that there is the, and I know I'm going to kind of be mixing things up here as far as different subjects and going down different paths, but we heard that the line was at the beginning of the administration that there would be a separation between the Trump business and the White House, and that Don Jr. and Eric would be handling that business. And yet they seem to have pretty much the same clearance in the sense of going to India, going on trips, and representing the United States. Am I wrong on that?
No, they've had this ample access for since the beginning of the administration throughout the campaign. But again, this shows that there's a disregard for the intelligence community. There's a disregard for how this government works. You know, we look at the vetting process for any of, you know, this administration's appointees. So this is not a surprise that he has been given clearance for this long, and we're only getting to the point now where it's being revoked. So,
but on the Suns, wasn't part of the agreement, I remember when the lawyer, the Trump lawyer,
yes,
stood up
yeah.
there
mm-hmm.
with all that turned out to be fake documents. Wasn't the agreement that they would not engage in politics or policy in the White House,
yes,
that right. would be the separation. Mm-hmm. Yet,
and no foreign deals either.
Yet their names are on fundraising letters. Mm-hmm. They are tweeting about politics all the time. They are giving,
Or liking tweets
right. that one would, anyway.
Find questionable.
Mm-hmm. And so I just don't understand how that's all happening. But mm-hmm. of course, I still can't get my mind around the what I still consider the post office, which is now, I can't even say it, that they took over to made their hotel, because mm-hmm. I love the post
right.
office in Washington, D.C. on Pennsylvania Avenue. It was a beautiful mm-hmm. building.
But
how is that working? I mean, that was the whole deal, that there would be a separation.
Well, they figured they'd make the announcement then, and then nobody would actually call them out on it. Down
okay,
the road.
So how come the reporters aren't calling them out on it?
Well, they absolutely should.
Are now,
and,
right?
and I think one of the other important questions to ask, if I were a reporter covering you know, Washington politics, is, you know, we keep hearing the quote that, you know, Jared Kushner still has very important work to do. Trump has given him very important work. What Kushner was designated or tapped to do was to be a sort of liaison with Mexico and to negotiate and be part of peacekeeping in the Middle East. What other clearances he has, you know, clearly he's also made trips and has connections with China, the UAE, Israel, and that's where we've most recently seen him doing business. It's also pretty easy for any journalist to say, call BS, if you will, on saying, you know, aren't you supposed to be doing your job? Your job was to focus on these two content areas.
But also the article that I found most disturbing, most disturbing on this topic, not the most disturbing, I think Admiral Rogers, but anyway, the Washington Post piece, it said China, the United Arab Emirates, Mexico, Israel, that they intercepted, that message was intercepted by officials in those four countries that said that they wanted to use business opportunities to seek leverage against Kushner.
Right.
And I don't think that's anything surprising.
No.
I think it's something that we do with any of other connections that we have. And so that part to me isn't so surprising, but I think there does need to be more digging into what Kushner's actual policies are.
But this is why you don't have those roles if you have conflicts. And let's look at this in the context of decimating the State Department. First of all, why is Jared Kushner? What experience does he have that gives him, that makes it appropriate that he has these roles anyway?
Well,
and you see another two more very high-level, long-term State Department folks leaving. Announced yesterday our envoy to North Korea, a longtime State Department officials leave, but they've decimated the State Department. There's a lot of confusion about who to listen to.
Well, the other thing you were talking about, why the clearance, and many who are listening may think of this as a cheap shot, and I don't really mean it as such. I do think it is a reality, and I think it's the truth, which is that what we know from reports from inside the White House, from outside the White House, from printed reports, that this is a president who does not read his security briefings, does not read the documents intimately, and has to be told the information in very short bits and bytes, which means that there are more people necessary to process that information and transport it to the President of the United States. So even with this clearance removed or downgraded,
does it really make a difference?
At the end of the day, you still have a person who has the President of the United States, who still has the top security clearance of all, with the inability then to process this information, and then no one around him who would have the clearance to do so. And I just wonder what kind of chaos that throws into an already chaotic mix of the White House.
And add to that, what does this do to the relationship between General Kelly and President Trump?
Right.
Which is already tenuous, because
And I apologize for interrupting, but also especially because of the relationship also between Kelly and Kushner, right?
Right, mm-hmm. Which has been
tense,
and some suggest it has been tense because General Kelly is very respectful of security clearance issues and protocol and process, and this has been a concern to him for a while. But who are doing the jobs?
Right.
And what about the other? There were reportedly about 30 people in the White House who hadn't been cleared yet, including Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And what about all of those other folks?
Well, everybody in communications, the whole White House. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the one thing going back to talking about the Trump family, we haven't really talked so much about what protections and assurances, you know, Kushner companies and the White House, you know, in terms of those conflicts of interest. We talked about obviously the Trump organization, mm-hmm. but not so much Kushner companies.
Mm-hmm. Well, so allegedly that they had an arrangement that he separated himself from the daily dealings of the company. But, I mean, there's still, we know the company is trying to get loans to mm-hmm. keep at least one of the buildings, more than one, but this famous 666 Fifth Avenue, you may know this story better than I, but they're trying to get the financing to keep it afloat.
For at least half the lease for it. I mean, it was one of the worst deals. It was done right before the
recession.
But
it was done under his name, and I think that's important to remember. I think it's important to remember that they have less than a year to sort of renegotiate that deal, which has been said by top financial experts and feasibility experts that it's just not. It's
too much underwater. Yeah. It's $1.8 billion in 2007.
Meanwhile, officials in at least four countries have privately discussed ways they can manipulate Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law and senior advisor, by taking advantage of his complex business arrangements, financial difficulties, and lack of foreign policy experience, according to current and former U.S. officials familiar with intelligence reports on the matter. This from the Washington Post. Among those nations discussing ways to influence Kushner to their advantage were the United Arab Emirates, China, Israel, and Mexico, according to the current and former officials. It's unclear if any of those countries acted on the discussions.
And so I can imagine some people listening, oh, you're always just harping on Trump and harping on why does this matter in our lives? So why does this matter in the lives of everyday people?
Well, again, it's basic ethics in government. But also, when you have these sorts of issues so prevalent and just so broad, it's honestly, it's a slap in the face to what we deem to be a great democracy here.
Mm-hmm. And I think it raises into question, as some of the other headlines we've been talking and will talk about the state and you know, vulnerability of our national security overall. You know, how prone are we to manipulation? Who can have access to what information? You know, what are the standards? If we're, you know, cherry picking that or piecemealing together those policies and protocol, that's pretty worrisome.
And I think about is when deals are done, you have to wonder, worry about, you know, was this done in the best interest of the United States?
Or
was
someone
this
else's
done because,
pockets.
Right.
You know, it's because it's manipulating a deal. And you've heard this, you know, when you read all the time about how other governments are confused and concerned about who do they negotiate with now? Mm-hmm. And whose word can they take, you know? And that's really... I mean, if you step back and see the deterioration of the U.S. standing overall in the world in the last year, it's dramatic. I mean, China is rising, and we are marginalized, confusing our, you know, our long-standing allies, Great Britain, Germany, France, others.
America first, Teresa.
But it's stunning, whether it's on the climate or TPP or the U.S. North Korea situation. Mm-hmm. We're just weak in the world.
We have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll have letters and we'll talk about other subjects as well. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation after this short break.
Working on a plan to settle my bones, dropping my mask and let my tired eyes show.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us, and we welcome your letters. A couple of you have taken us up on that offer, and we'll read those in just a second. It's panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org, and we will get to your letters. We also want to move on to other subjects, which we'll do in just a second. But again, all we ask is that you keep your letters short, to the point, on topic, don't include links. And, you know, one a day is fine. One a day plus iron. Okay.
And if you've never written?
Yes, absolutely. You know,
right.
Yeah.
Want to hear from you?
So Kathy checks in and said, so the reason the clearance fiasco went on for so long is because the entire administration thought they were immune. What changed? Mueller, Kelly, and all the others finally figured out that they are at risk of being accountable. And, oh, by the way, it's not just Kushner. It's numerous folks. Did you see the firing of four appointees at Commerce?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Right. The four people yesterday, let me get there, were dismissed, and including one person who had been a close assistant to Wilbur Ross, and three others. Let me see if I can get their names. Sorry, I don't have their names or titles in front of me. I thought I pulled that up last night. But in any case, because they lacked the sufficient clearance to do their jobs, and one of them was involved in promoting international trade deals, and it's interesting to me because I thought back about the Trump campaign where over and over he was denigrating the U.S. negotiators and saying that, you know, they do terrible deals, and when I get in, I'm going to do the best deals. Right. I'm going to do the best deals right. ever, and I'm going to have the best people, and they're going to do the best deals. And yet here now four of his people in commerce who are there to do the best deals have to leave because they can't do deals because they don't have proper security clearance.
So why does it matter in that case to the point where they have to leave? Why is there accountability there and not accountability within the White House? Do you know what I mean? I mean, yes, mm-hmm. there was the security clearance was lowered, but there's still security clearance.
Right. It's also security clearance. And the answer is I don't understand why. I don't understand what happened to the, you know, we know what happened to Kushner. But what about the 30 or so other people in the White House who only had interim clearance? And, you know, what's happening with them? And with these folks, I don't know if they were given the option to be downgraded to a different job that didn't require right. clearance or leave, and so they chose to leave. But certainly, if you are promoting international trade deals, you can't do that without clearance.
Right, right.
Because of the potential conflicts of interest. And then the issue is how come these people can't get clearance? Now, clearance is cumbersome. It takes a long time. It is a complicated system. But
important.
But mm-hmm. it's really, really important.
And it definitely raises the questions of, you know, what are the guidelines in right. place for clearance? What's the protocol? What's the timeline? And if that doesn't exist, that's a problem. I mean, we don't even have a job description for what it takes to be a president of the United States. So, you know, I think there's a lot of questions and liberties taken when it comes to, you know, it's being left to subjectivity versus, you know, some hard lines on, you know, what is possible, what isn't possible, and who has access to what.
But previous administration folks said this notion, you know, that the Kelly memo, which I read, 4-page memo, which just suggested that they were left a mess and that there were no ground rules, and now that they were going to make sure that there were structure for the next administration. Mm-hmm. Well, previous administrations, Republicans and Democrats, have said that's just not the
right.
case.
Right. This is not the first rodeo show for anybody.
No.
Right.
And we're seeing that with a lot of headlines right now, especially with the cybersecurity hearing that was the other day. It's the same issue that this is nothing new.
Right. So the Commerce Department slots were the person who is the executive director of Select USA, a program that promotes foreign investment in the United States. The acting head of the Minority Business Development Agency, senior advisor to the International Trade Administration, and advisor to the Director of Economic Development Administration. Those are the four people who left Commerce yesterday, reportedly, over security clearance issues.
Here's another letter. This one from Andrew, who says a secret clearance isn't really designed for those who need access to secret data at all. It is more for those in the military, law enforcement, contractors, etc., who might casually come into contact with information that might better be characterized as sensitive or simply embarrassing. It is probably held by tens or even hundreds or thousands of individuals. For example, as a cadet at the Air Force Academy, I held a secret clearance.
Well, there's also defense contractors as well that have secret clearance, and obviously top secret, confidential. I mean, there's a number of different levels of clearance. Even when you do advance for different events that might have the president or another government, high-level government VIP, there's different levels of what you can actually have mm-hmm. in that regard, too.
So Kushner now, you know, he was reportedly looking at the PDB, President's Daily Brief. You clearly can't do that with just secret clearance. And you can't go into the Situation Room with secret clearance. You can't read a lot of the documents. How can you be the envoy to Israel without secret clearance? You cannot do that because you cannot be read in on important information right. that you would need to do your job. So the question is then, what will his job be?
Mm-hmm. And is this a temporary rebuke of clearance too?
Right.
The other thing, and I want to get to what Jen said and anecdotally, but yet you still have to talk to your spouse and to your brother and your sister and your dad.
But if you have clearance, you know that you can't convey that information, though. That's the thing.
You're not supposed to.
That's the point.
I mean, so as you say, he wouldn't have access to the daily security briefings, but this is the issue that I raised before. But if not him, who? I mean, if you take that out of the equation, then who's distilling that information for the president?
Well, who's the current...
Who's in charge?
Well, that's one of the things that I wonder, with Porter gone, who is the secretary to the president? Because that is a key job. Now, they may have put... sometimes they put a military officer in there. And one of the questions I had is, because if Porter only had interim clearance, either he was breaking the law and looking at stuff he shouldn't be seeing, or he was seeing some stuff, and then they had a military person with the highest clearance in there sorting the stuff that he couldn't see. I don't know. So, but who is seeing this information? And it just raises the question: is, you know, there are people in the State Department who are experts in U.S. policy in the Middle East, who in other administrations have the appropriate clearance and would be giving that advice to the president, his son-in-law. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
This letter from Martin, who says, the panelists just stated they were not surprised Kushner would be targeted by foreign intelligence services. Do not stop being surprised. None of this is normal. Mm-hmm.
It's not normal.
It's not.
I think we all are on that. We're all on the same page there.
There's nothing normal about this administration. For those who say it's just partisan bickering, this goes way beyond partisanship. I mean, I can't imagine either Bush administration not making sure that their folks had proper security clearance.
Peter writes and said, Jared Kushner's top secret security clearance was revoked. Did John Kelly make that decision? If not, who did? If it was Kelly, is Kelly overseen by Trump in this context? In essence, who decides who has top security clearance and who oversees that decision? Well, according to Sarah Huckabee Sanders and the other matter, it was the White House Security Office. Am I right on that?
That was bogus. She's just...
Yeah, I know.
The stuff she said yesterday, I just don't get how she can keep saying the stuff she says. What she said about...
The last thing is that process vulnerable to abuse, the granting and maintenance of security clearances? That's Peter's question.
Peter, Google General Kelly's 4-page memo on the security clearance process, that he's in charge. It's his responsibility. But I believe legally the president can grant grant security clearance.
Right.
So what they do is they investigate, they provide the information to the senior officer. So for instance, in the Commerce Department, it would be to Ross, the secretary, but it would go through their counsel. And it's up to the counsel and the secretary to make a determination based on the information that they've received. So what they do is get information that says, we can clear him, we can't clear him, or we can't clear him or her yet.
Right.
And then it's the supervising officer then makes the decision of yes or no to give them the clearance, but there are guidelines in which they make the decision.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll move on to other topics. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. We're listening to Deer Tick. They're playing Friday, March 2nd at the Academy of Music in Northampton, Massachusetts, and on Saturday at The Haunt in Ithaca, New York. They've been playing your music this morning, and you can always check out our website and find out what we're playing, what songs, when, and all that good stuff, so you can keep score at home. Deer Tick playing on Friday night in Northampton and Saturday in Ithaca. All right.
Okay, I'm an old person, but why would you name your band Deer Tick? Something that people
don't... I don't know. I have to say, I think it's cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
Who wants a deer tick?
I don't know. You see,
the Doors,
it's like,
Deer Tick.
Yeah. That's right, like earworm.
The Beatles? I mean, yeah, there's different names. It's okay. deer ticks okay?
Yard birds.
I'm just curious. Anything's yeah. bad?
Okay.
They're a little dangerous.
So yeah.
You get it? Yeah. All right. Well.
They make you sick.
Oh, stop.
Well. They make you weary.
No, we're trying to sell tickets.
Right. Yeah. Not right. A lot of music. Not, I'm an old person.
Okay.
Go hear deer tick. You don't need repellent to go.
Oh. There it is.
This is like curling all over again.
Oh, no.
Hey, don't make fun of curling. Do not make fun of curling. Not a fan of curling.
Can't make fun of curling. Can't make fun of deer tick.
No.
Okay. Got it. Okay,
about...
next topic. The head Please. Of U.S. Cyber Command warned lawmakers that penalties and other measures have not changed the calculus or the behavior, that is a quote, changed the calculus or the behavior of Russia as it seeks to interfere with this year's midterm elections. Admiral Michael Rogers, who directs the National Security Agency as well, said, quote, "We are taking steps, but we're probably not doing enough." He said so in testimony before the Senate Armed Services Committee. Russian President Vladimir Putin, he added, quote, "has clearly come to the conclusion that there's little price to pay here, and therefore I can continue this activity." Rogers said, "If we don't change the dynamic here, this is going to continue." More concerning is this. He said that President Trump has given him no new authorities or capabilities to strike at Russian cyber operations ahead of the midterms. But Rogers has directed CyberCom's National Mission Force, which protects the U.S. homeland from foreign cyber threats, quote, to begin some specific work. He did not elaborate. Why should this not scare the hell out of us?
Well, it should.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of the understatement of the century. We're probably not doing enough. Yeah, clearly we're not doing enough, whether it's on the federal level or on the state level, to protect our election system. We have to do something about it because we cannot let this continue.
Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to say, so I really looked into this because it was fascinating to me. And so I went back through DOD memos, and in March 18th, 2016, in front of a House panel where he was talking about countries that have capabilities sophisticated enough to penetrate in our, quote, best guarded networks. He named Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, and ISIL. And he said, quote, "They steal intellectual property, citizens' personal information, and they have intruded into networks. From the Joint Staff's unclassified network to networks controlling our critical infrastructure." So we have been talking about, he has been talking about this for a long time as part of his 37-year career. Again, the warning signs have been there. Like our last writer said, this is not surprising news because this news has been out there before. But, it, you know, we should be afraid. We should be questioning, you know, why nothing more has been done. And over this time, over the past more, almost nearly a decade, the National Mission Force has been beefing up its teams. There are 133 teams out there. There's hundreds of millions of dollars that are being invested into preparing for it. So we have the teams in place. We have their specialties figured out. They're active. They're ready. Why aren't they doing their jobs?
Right.
Why do they not have the directive to do their jobs?
Right. That's the question. Yeah. Why don't they have the directive? I mean, our listeners who are active military or retired military, you know, I'd be interested in hearing from them because to me, this is so extraordinary that a military person would do what he did to send a signal to his commander in chief. And this comes at the heels of the director of national intelligence, Dan Coats, who testified not long ago in the Senate. In not as direct a way, but sending the same strong message that there is a serious problem here, a serious threat to the United States, that the United States has the capacity to respond to that threat, but that a comprehensive response is not being marshaled by this administration. And Admiral Rogers, I mean, what happened yesterday was extraordinary and frightening. Reminder, we know that this president is not doing this. So then the question is, What is Senator Mitch McConnell going to do? What is Speaker Ryan going to do? Because if the president is not going to act, then can the Congress act? Well, now you know the Congress did. Strong bipartisan support pass requiring the pass legislation requiring the president to impose sanctions on Russia, and the president has failed to impose those sanctions. Mm-hmm. So what do you do in a case where your intelligence community is saying publicly now what they would typically say privately? Obviously, they're trying to say it privately. They're not being heard. So they're going to the extraordinary measure of saying it publicly. What's the president going to do?
Sarah Huckabee Sanders said, quote, we're focused, and one asked about this yesterday, we're focused on looking at a variety of different ways. She pointed to a State Department announcement of $40 million to support public and private efforts to combat Russian and Chinese propaganda. Is that really what we're, I mean, I guess it is, but is that specifically what we're talking about here? And a meeting with the Homeland Security Secretary held with state, local, and federal officials who are, quote, working on ways that we can best prevent things like this in the future.
And I don't think that is what I think she's talking about. Two different things. Propaganda is one thing, but we know that there's been penetration of infrastructure. We've known since, the Red October case in 2012, Fancy Bear, which started in 2016. We know this is happening. So, like,
Fancy Bear and what?
What was the other one? Red October was another nickname. I would love to be someone who just comes up with the nicknames.
Oh, yeah, these code names. Yeah.
Here's one. You ready?
Yeah.
Deer Tick.
Yeah.
There it is. But
coming soon to the national security brief.
It makes you sick for a long time.
Well, I guess for me, it's just, when you work in the electoral system and you have each state and every county has a different set of guidelines and also what they do to protect their information technology infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take much to switch over the results. So if you... We're not even focused so much on the federal midterm, but like you look at local elections and state elections where the influence can be profound, especially at the state legislature level, where a lot of decisions in terms of redistricting will come up in the next few years. Mm-hmm. That can make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. And this really gets at the fundamentals of our democracy, which is the voting. And as I listened to one of the commentators last night, and I apologize that I can't remember which one, it was kind of a blur, but said that, imagine at the next election, you start seeing some returns come in, and they're really off of what you would think would be the norm. Are people going to say, well, that's interference, or is that just, did something happen
and
to
we
change?
Know that it's,
you know,
it's,
what's causing it? You don't know. Now we're going to wonder. Now, there is, as Sarah Huckabee Sanders said, there is an effort to work with the states to secure the election process, but there isn't the effort at deterrence,
right?
Not one single cabinet meeting.
Mm-hmm. And again, I think we're underutilizing our national investment. We've invested hundreds of millions of dollars that have been earmarked, in the 600 range, earmarked for cybersecurity. We have these 133 teams of some 5,000 Air Force and other military folks trained, ready to attack this. We had a hard deadline between 2016, and these groups had to be activated by September of this year. Why are we neglecting to appoint and activate the infrastructure that we have? And I think, Admiral Rogers did bring into question the issue of, is it right to just do to them what they're doing to us, or are there other strategies? And I think that also needs to be discussed and illuminated as well.
Right, because there is an issue about retaliation in kind, that if you retaliate in kind, then does that just start a cyber war that you don't want to go down that road, because it's, you know.
And that is also very scary. I mean, we know, look at the design of the way things are, filtering. It's going into our general use social media. We know about bot attacks. We know about spear phishing attempts. It's these these little things that are happening, you know, maybe on little issues that we consider like, oh, a bank scam or the grandparent scams and things like that. But they're on the same plane. They're very real. They do exist. You know, what's being done instead of, you know, $40 million to support these efforts, you know, what are we doing to secure our general population's information?
The other thing concerning, I don't know, maybe there's more to this, but from the very beginning, going back to the debates, mm-hmm. the president said, we don't even know that it's Russia, it could be China.
And he said to Russia...
Right.
What did he say about Russia?
But in Huckabee's, in Sarah Huckabee Sanders' remarks yesterday, saying the propaganda of Russia and China, they're still not taking the, to me, it's not the threat, the direct threat
line.
Of Russia. And
right.
and I see that as, right. as greatly concerning, if especially when you hear people of Admiral Rogers
and Dan Coats
caliber, yes.
And he reinforced yesterday that Russia is continuing its efforts to disrupt the U.S. political system, mm-hmm. and we're not responding. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, I see a connection. This, you know, may be wildly crazy, but Trump also yesterday announced that Brad Parscale, I don't think I'm saying his name correctly, will be the running his
campaign manager
for 2020.
Yes. Yep.
Now, he's the guy that ran his online operation.
Social
That's what
media.
He, social media.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's the guy who worked with Cambridge Analytica. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just think for those two things to happen on the same
If you want to find out more information about him, there was a great 60 Minutes piece done several months ago after the election that is worth your attention just to see. Mm-hmm.
And there was a profile done on him before the election on who he was and what was going on in Texas that no one, you know, everybody's saying.
He's a smart guy.
Very smart guy. Yeah. But just, I don't know. I
guess the one thing I just want to add to is that, you know, people are looking at November in terms of like the impact. We have June congressional primaries that are going to be taking place. We have primaries at other points throughout the summer. So you're going to start seeing the influence right now.
Hey, just
right.
on a positive note.
Okay, positive note, and then we got to go to news. Although Ray may have left. Did he give up? No, all right, he'll come back. Okay, go ahead.
Elections last night in New Hampshire flipped another seat for the Democrats on a positive note.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be back, Ray Graff with news, and we'll continue. We'll have your letters and continue with other subjects. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Teresa Bourgeois is here. Joe Bonilla joins us, as does Jen Smith. Alan is off today, and we thank you very much for being with us. Let us go to some letters. I have quite a few. Here we go. James says the elephant in the room is the T word, treason. The Trump administration is a nest of traitors, and the House Republicans are their protectors. Reporters, including the New York Times chief White House correspondent, on CNN or MSNBC agreed collusion with Russia was happening, but they don't know why yet.
And do they protect them from because of the other T word, taxes, tax breaks?
David writes, would Donald Trump be able to get a security clearance for any government job if he wasn't president of the United States?
Probably not. Oops. We're just going to go out on a limb on that
one. That's not even say probably. Yeah. Let's just say
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Will says, if blackmailable is a disqualification for receiving top secret clearance, then how can Trump get that level? I believe that his exposure is the whole reason we're in this mess now. Neil writes, if the president was not president and needed to get security clearance as a staffer, would he be able to? Another question, shouldn't we require presidential candidates to obtain security clearances before seeking office? That's an interesting question.
It is. Very interesting. Well, it's like being Corey checked or something.
Right. Well, previously, of course, all candidates disclosed their tax returns.
Right.
And that's one, you know, looking at your finances is one big part of the security clearance. And then looking at, you know, but given his bankruptcies, the number of bankruptcies, giving his
all the
how
LLCs,
much he's indebted,
yeah, I mean, it's the
there's
whole
no
thing.
Way
right.
that he would get cleared.
No.
He would never get cleared. And you've heard people who do clearance talking about that. So the experts have already said he would never get cleared.
James says, so would Trump's inability or unwillingness to do anything against Russia's interference with our elections be so if anything negative happens in upcoming elections, he can say, see, the elections are rigged, yada, yada, yada.
That certainly goes into the whole theory of the chaos presidency. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that whole theory of the chaos presidency, meaning no matter what happens, you can point to it and say, see, this is what I've been telling you all along.
Rigged or whatever it could be. I mean, it could be a number of things.
I don't think that's why he's doing it, but I think that's one of the...
A fringe benefit, if you will?
Yeah.
But I think overall, he's just not up for the job. And he doesn't have enough people around him who are up for the job.
Right.
I shouldn't say enough people. He doesn't have the right people.
So this letter from Bobby brings up, I think, an interesting question that I don't think we addressed in our discussion. Why would Trump and Republicans do anything about Russian interference in our elections? Trump invited, begged Russians to do so. They did. Trump won. Trump wants the Russians to interfere again so Republicans will win midterm elections or so he will be reelected. You touched on this, Teresa, but let me just go back on it, which is while Admiral Rogers was testifying yesterday, the silence among the Republicans, I thought, was quite deafening. The Democrats obviously were outraged. Some Republicans showed concern, but not the general concern that you think would be a result of this.
I find it stunning. I mean, when you get elected, you take an oath, and your oath is to uphold the Constitution, the fundamentals of our democracy. And this is not upholding the fundamentals of our democracy. And so the fact that they're choosing party over country, and I think it is for the purpose that I alluded to a little while ago, because while all this chaos is happening, they can get their tax bill passed that benefits them and their friends. They can get these judges in for life and so on and so forth. So they're getting their agenda through. The next effort is the long desired effort to cut the core Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security. That's the Paul Ryan has said over and over. That's his next focus. So their policy, under cover of all this chaos, they get to pass their policy agenda. But at what price? And is this, in fact, a risk to our democracy? And at what point will these folks step back and then stand up and say, bridge too far? And these folks in the intelligence community have been warning over and over since before the election. They have been warning over and over, danger, danger here. This is a danger to our democracy. And these Republicans are not responding. I find it stunning and scary.
We got this letter from Mark who says, since you wanted to hear from ex-military, here you go. Maybe we should focus first on the propaganda, i.e. false dossiers created by the DNC at home that are attacking our democracy from the inside before we worry about Russia. Hypocrites, period.
So the notion that the dossier was fake, funded by the Democrats, ignores a couple of things. But thank you for writing. I really do appreciate it. But the dossier was first funded by Republicans. Let's remember this started with Republicans funding to get opposition research. Everybody gets opposition research. And it's also become clear over time that the FISA warrant, that this is what Trump is upset, that the FISA warrant to allow them to monitor Carter Page, the dossier was just one part of an overall package of materials that was used and put before four different judges. All four of those judges were Republicans, were nominated by Republicans. So Republican-nominated judges reviewed a range of materials, including information from the dossier, and came to the conclusion that the FISA warrant should be granted to continue monitoring Carter Page. Now, 40 minutes ago, Donald Trump tweeted an attack on his attorney general, yet again, saying, why is AG Jeff Sessions asking the inspector general to investigate potentially massive FISA abuse? Will take forever, has no power, already late with reports on Comey, et cetera. Isn't the IG an Obama guy? Why not use Justice Department lawyers? Disgraceful. More distraction. You know, in response to what we heard yesterday from Admiral Rogers, what the president should be doing is calling a meeting of his National Security Council and talking about what we're going to do about Russian interference in our government.
Yeah. And I think going back to the letter writer's, concern, I think one of the concerns that should also be discussed is, you know, just simple matter of prioritizing issues. I think whether you believe that's a case or not, you still need to have a group look at it in depth, discuss it, and make some action on it.
You have to have the insight, you have to be able to protect the system, but you also have to look into the whole situation in a comprehensive manner.
Mm. And Republicans, and let's be clear on FISA, Republicans and Democrats, for different reasons, have had concerns about the FISA system, but not the concern about the FISA warrant that was given to continue scrutinizing Carter Page.
We got this letter, and then we'll move on. Two more letters, and then we'll talk about guns, right? Linda says, could it be that Trump is dragging his feet dealing with Russia because he's hoping that they will keep Republicans in power, similar to the previous letter? Catherine says, who's to say that if there's a Democratic wave in the midterms, the Republicans will not cry foul and challenge the legitimacy of these elections? It's crossed my mind a number of times that they're delaying taking action until it is more beneficial to them.
Yeah, certainly that could be the case, right?
Absolute possibility.
Yay. Okay, so let's go on to other stories and talk about guns. And there's two stories, one in the New York Times, one in the Washington Post. We'll begin with what's happening today, and that is a gun summit. President Trump has backed off his call to raise the minimum age for rifle purchases, or at least that's what Senator Pat Roberts believes. Senator Chris Murphy, meanwhile, thinks the administration is seriously weighing expanding background checks for gun purchases. Yet Senate Majority Whip John Cornyn, a close ally of the White House who has spoken with Trump about the issue, has personally gotten no such indication. Lawmakers, in other words, have no real idea what Trump wants from them on gun policy in the wake of the massacre at a South Florida high school. There is expected to be a meeting today, correct, on guns. And
bipartisan.
And it is unclear as to this bipartisan gun summit at the White House. And it's unclear what's going to happen, but lawmakers are searching for signals from the administration on how it wants Congress to respond to the February 14th shooting and how serious the president is about the various proposals he has floated in the days since 17 people were gunned down at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida.
You know, again, it goes back to, I mean, we've had these summits, we've had these other meetings. I mean, whether it's guns or other issues, you know, the issue comes down to, the administration continues to waffle on any real substantial policy or ideology in this case. And I think, you know, at it today, I don't really see any real substantial action out of the administration.
And I think, again, you know, I think the AP just reported the other day about people's lack of faith in Congress. And I think this adds to that. Meanwhile, you have this going on, you have Florida that's pushing ahead. You have other states that are pushing ahead. We saw this with Las Vegas. We see this in Massachusetts and in other states. If you look at the bigger picture too, I think, you know, there's a lot of questions about grassroots movements and what's effective. And I think you're going to see more movement on the microcosm than at the macro level in terms of this. And I think because they're at the macro level, there's a lot of other issues tied in, whether it be business, taxes, other politics. It's going to be a little bit more, or a lot of it, some would argue, slower moving.
Yeah, I think that the White House sent a range of signals. You know, Trump, as with DACA, he's on all sides of this. But, you know, it's Don't tell me what's in your heart. Show me what's in your budget, and I'll tell you what's in your heart. Was Joe's, you know, a version of what Joe Biden, former Vice President Joe Biden, says. And if you look at what was in the Trump budget, it was deep cuts in programs for
public safety,
public safety, and violence, anti-violence right. programs in the schools. Deep cuts in funding for mental health programs. And you have Paul Ryan yesterday signaling they're not going to take up guns. And the governors are saying one of the solutions on the mental health side is that we need Medicaid to pay for inpatient. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you have Paul Ryan and the Republicans saying we're going to cut Medicaid. Mm-hmm. So, you know, follow the money. And all of this, let's follow the money. Mm-hmm. So I think you're not really going to have action in this Congress. The action will come in November at the ballot box, where the voters will say, which side are we on? Are we on the side of the Republicans who want to talk and do nothing, or we want to elect people who are really going to move on this issue? Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, I think you got a clear signal at the National Governors Association meeting that governors, Republican and Democrat, are ready to move ahead. Mm-hmm. And also in the corporate world, you saw the Dick's Sporting Goods today
yes.
made a decision. Mm-hmm. And you see pressure. Mm-hmm. Pressure is not only being put on the Congress, but pressure, you need to put pressure on your state and local elected officials.
That's right. Exactly.
But on business. And I know we were talking, Joe, about what happened with the news about FedEx.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, you look at Federal Express, who, you know, they have been publicly trying to distance themselves from the NRA, but there was a secret document that was in Think Progress where it's talked about what they actually do for gun manufacturing in terms of shipping, where you look at competitors such as UPS and DHL, where there is an overnight shipping rule, but they've allowed, FedEx has actually allowed for gun manufacturers to actually waive that overnight and actually have a two-day shipping process to reduce costs and therefore make it easier for gun manufacturers to ship across the country. So, again, this is not going to be tolerated by, I think, the American public moving forward in that way.
Mm-hmm. And so people have a choice. Do you want to ship through the Postal Service? Do you want to ship through UPS? Or do you want to ship through FedEx?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, for those who know this and they want to vote with their dollars,
right. mm-hmm.
a way they can vote with their dollars is to say to FedEx, you know, you can do that,
and that's,
but that's fine.
Right.
That's the American enterprise, but we're not going to support you.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then you also look at Delta Airlines, where you have a candidate for governor, the current lieutenant governor there, who's threatening to take away tax breaks. And then you see here in New York State with the lieutenant governor here, Kathy Hochul, calling basically for Delta to come here. And mm-hmm. same thing in Virginia with the governor there as well. So you're looking at basically, could this be a real shift in terms of how we actually get companies to do what we believe to be the right thing? Mm-hmm. And actually how they can actually move with their dollars and their feet.
And it would seem that it would be appropriate and sensible for Congress to do the same, you know, to follow suit of the governors and to follow suit of these business CEOs, because they know the power of their consumers and constituencies.
Right.
And, you know, that's really where you're going to see any sort of change and precedents that are being set.
Right. So I think it's all about following. And in another...
So I'm sorry, yeah. Just because we only have about a minute and a half, I apologize for...
Quick.
What comes out of a summit?
I
mean,
I think that there'll be more talk about things that they might be able to do, and then they.
But they're going in hoping that they get clear language from the Trump administration. Do you believe that's going to be the case?
I do not believe, because you heard Sarah Huckabee Sanders yesterday. If this were the Obama administration or others, they would be proposing language. And what she said is, "Well, we haven't seen any bills yet from the, you know, we don't know what's in that bill yet." So they're just going to, I think, say to the Congress, you write the proposals, we'll tell you yes or no. And Congress is saying, we're not going to write the proposal until we know what you're going to sign. So there'll be an impasse, and then in a couple weeks from now, we'll move on, as has happened over and over, to the next thing. Now, whether or not these young people will allow that to happen is an interesting question.
Oh, absolutely.
We shall see. By the way, $31,000 for a dining set?
I did not know you could pay Former Congressman John Dingell had the best tweet. He said, I paid less than $31,000 for my first house.
Taxpayers paid for Ben Carson's $31,000 dining set.
I did not know you could pay $31,000 for a dining set.
Wow.
And the limit,
but the problem is, do you?
It's
will
not coming
you?
From IKEA.
But you know, a public servant, a federal
unless
employee.
It was delivered from Sweden.
Right.
She was demoted because she would not do this because there's a $5,000 limit for redecorating the office, and she would not adhere to the $5,000 limit, and she was demoted. And then they went ahead and bought curtains and a $31,000 table.
Well, but if you save on the curtains, you can spend a little bit more on it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Everybody, look up Rosalind Franklin. DNA. Oh,
thank you very much. Homework from Teresa. We'll be back tomorrow, and we'll continue with the program after this.